Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stage Right, the show that looks at the lack of conservative voices in theater and asks, why? With your host, Rocky Benisher.
I'm back. Hello, everybody. It's Rocky Benisher, Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to Stage Right. This is the show that asks conservatives to get out of their slumber, their cultural slumber. Bad enough what they're doing in Washington, or not doing. I don't know if we have many conservatives in Washington. But that's another topic for another day and probably another show, because we focus on theater. Theater and the lack of conservative themes and voices in American theater or British theater or any theater in the contemporary world. Hey, I want to welcome you again. We've been out for about 2 weeks, and I have some stuff to talk about my trip to Toronto, which I'm going to do in a few minutes. But I want to invite you to call me at 347-884-9659. That number is 347-884-9659, and you can chat with me about anything you want, as long as it has to do with the theater and conservatives in the theater, or you might be angry that there's any conservatives out there who are even thinking about theater. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. You can write to me also at StageRightAudio1. That's StageRightAudio1 at gmail.com, StageRightAudio1 at gmail.com. And as I often like to do, I want to remind you that we are supported by our friends at Xander Business Group. They provide social media monitoring and online risk assessment for your child's online presence. Here's what I don't understand. We read every day about some internet breach that somebody's life was exposed on the social media platform. We hear about terrible things, of course, like rapes and things of that horrible nature. But we also, you know, people posting pictures of celebrities from years ago that are damaging to the person's career. Hey, I'm no fan of celebrities per se. A, they're mostly left-wingers. And B, you know, they really have a sense of importance that is so ill-deserved. You know, I hear... I'm in Columbus, Ohio, as you know, and I hear, and there is a movie being filmed here with John Travolta, and it's an independent kind of a film with Travolta, and one of the actresses, Rebecca De Mornay, is said to be the biggest diva going, and I ask myself, why would this be? Mr. De Mornay, what do you do to further society? Are you saving lives? Have we not noticed it? Are you doing something for people? Are you putting food in people's stomachs? Oh, my God, he doesn't sound conservative. Of course I do, because we do care about these things. It's just the approach that we take is different from our friends on the left. But still, why would actors, sports figures, and those folks be so full of themselves? What are you doing to save a life? What are you doing to better humankind? That's the question I want all of my conservative friends to ask their liberal friends. Tell me what you do on a daily basis to make people's lives better. Other than complain, what do you do? Anyway, got off on a tangent here, but the fact is that every day we see people's lives exposed, good things and bad things exposed on social media. So you need a group like Xander Business Group to come in and help you with your underage, I mean younger than 18, children who need to be protected for their own good. Parents and teachers, guardians, do you know what your children are doing on the internet, on Facebook, on Pinterest, on Instagram, on Twitter, on any of those formats? Do you know what they're doing? Because the internet never forgets, and it's even more important for parents to take a proactive role in protecting their child's safety as well as online reputation. So I urge you to contact Xander Business Group. Trust me, they know what they're doing. They can be reached at 760 760-865-9614, 760-865-9614, or emailing at info@ZanderBusinessGroup, that's all one word, Zander with an X, ZanderBusinessGroup.com. Okay. Well, so first of all, I want to let you know that I'm trying something new today on Stage Right. As most of you who listen know, you hear it in the background now. I have parrots. I've got three parrots, and they're constantly squawking. And even if you cover the cage, you can't shut them up. But I also have in my little menagerie here two dogs. Now, my dogs are usually kept in another room, but we're going to try an experiment today. We're going to see if these dogs can keep quiet during the show. Right now, they're actually with me. You know, I listen to Dr. Laura, and she's got her Rhodesian Ridgebacks with her. And every once in a while, you'll hear one of these dogs make a sound. My dogs will pretty much be quiet unless somebody dares to walk outside. And if somebody dares to do that, particularly if he or she has a canine of his or her own, we are in mighty big trouble because there will be lots and lots of barking. So let's see how that goes. I think maybe it'll give some flavor to the show. So I recently came back from Toronto. What was I doing in Toronto? No, I was not visiting the hotel where, was it the Rolling Stones were arrested? Was it Keith Richards who was arrested? No, I was or going to see what Joni Mitchell wrote, Big Yellow Taxi. None of those things I was doing in Toronto. What I was doing was going to see a production of Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward. Those of you who are familiar with the play know that, and I'm very familiar with the play, that Blithe Spirit is a British drawing room comedy about a gentleman who is married, but this is his second marriage. His first wife passed away, and in doing some research on the paranormal, which he is skeptical about, he invites a kind of eccentric medium. It was played by Angela Lansbury, so this medium was extra large. Anyway, that's why you go to a show like this, and it's a wonderful show, don't get me wrong, but the headliner was, of course, Angela Lansbury as Madame Arcati, the medium who brings back through her seance the dear departed second wife and all the craziness that goes on there. It's lightly farcical, very proper, Noel Coward, and a delightful production. Angela Lansbury, I'm happy to report, at age 89, is doing just fine. Thank you very much. What a wonderful performance. She was energetic in ways you generally probably don't see 89-year-old people being. Throwing herself around the stage, doing all these kinds of movements as she was going into her trance. Hilariously funny. The production overall, also starred, by the way, Charles Edwards as Charles, so I guess he didn't have to get mixed up, but his name appeared in the script. Charlotte Parry as Ruth. That's the present-day husband and wife. Of course, Angela Lansbury as Madame Arcati. But also Jemima Rooper as Elvira. Is that not the most British name you've ever heard? Jemima Rooper. Yes. I'm Jemima Rooper. Brother. And a bunch of others who I don't want to dismiss because everybody was really terrific. This play was 2.5 hours long with a 15-minute intermission. Which, by the way, I think lasted a little longer, but even so, you know what it's like in the theater if even the first 20 minutes is deadly. This moved. What a wonderful pace. It was directed by Michael Blackmore, I believe, who is a very well-known Australian. Michael Blakemore. That's how well-known he is here. I get his name wrong. But Michael Blakemore is a very well-known Tony Award-winning director. And he directed this fine production, which I understand had been on Broadway a number of years ago, and now she's touring, Miss Lansbury is touring in this show in a number of different cities, Toronto being the closest to me, and I said, this one I think is going to make my bucket list, and indeed it did. So what's wonderful about a play like this and a production like this is, you know, you didn't sit there and say, oh, there's a shot at Republicans, or oh, there's a shot at conservatives. It was really wonderful that was not the case. And it brings to mind a question that people have asked me or alluded to. And I know people like Mark Philip Schwamberger mentioned this, and others who have spoken with me either on the air or off the air have mentioned that, you know, theater itself, they say, is a very conservative medium. And I wonder what they mean by that, because I'm hard-pressed to find something that is specifically conservative, unless we go back, say, to the 2012 Republican Theater Festival put together by our friend Kara Blewin. And you wonder, why would somebody say that theater is conservative? And I think what they're alluding to is that it is a capitalist endeavor. It is an endeavor of to make money, okay? And the end there, that's the end of it all, is that it's to pull a profit. And so what you get are very unchallenging intellectually, if you will, plays that are of the blithe spirit quality, or usually less than the blithe spirit quality, but you get the musicals, you get the revivals. You don't get, if you really want to be commercial, you don't get the real thought-provoking theater that moves us spiritually and emotionally and actually gets our brain juices going. And I wonder, you know, if what they're not truly saying is that if it's mindless entertainment, if it is for a profit, and if it is, basically a lot of sizzle and no steak, well, that's the conservative theater. The everything else theater is thought-provoking but has no money, so it has to put on these shows in back alleys somewhere or in basements or in wherever you can find space and put on really what's going on. You know, I think there's some truth to that. I think that just like in business, if you really want to know in business what's going on in the business world, you don't ask the managers, you ask the people in the trenches. And for theater, it's the people in the trenches who are making, I believe, the cultural inroads into theater. But this is again why I say, where is the conservative voice there? Why can't we similarly make these cultural inroads? Away from Blythe Spirit, wonderful production. Somebody go, you know, my listener, go out and find Angela Lansbury in this. Have a wonderful time. You won't think of politics at all. And that's good. But why, again, can't playwrights make those same inroads in the culture war today? Okay? I mean, why should we be content with people labeling the commercial theater as being quote-unquote conservative because it is a money-making capitalist venture? And I really think I've said this before, and I'm going to repeat it again today because of some things I want to talk about. We being conservative writers, we have got to stop being so complacent, and we've got to stop being so scared, and we've got to put our stuff out there. And yes, I'm sure what you're saying is what we do put our stuff out there. We do put our stuff out there, but nobody accepts it. But we've got to find ways to get ourselves promoted. We've got to find ways to get ourselves produced, even if we're going to do it ourselves. Because if we start sending out our conservative plays to all these little back alley groups, and that's not to put them down. That's just they're not the commercial theater. Okay, that's conservative. If we start sending our plays out to these folks, chances are, unless you find a Kara Blewin out there, they're not going to put it on. So what we've got to do is put it on ourselves. If we are passionate about theater, why aren't we doing that? Okay, a couple of things, because I want to get to a play, a very short play that I'm going to read to you today by a conservative playwright. You know, you look and you'll find named Hank Kimmel. And Hank is going to be our guest next week. But I want to keep watching the time and move quickly here. Okay, this is a newspaper article that I read today in my local paper, and it is from the Associated Press. And it's about the 2014 General Social Survey. It measures trends in American opinion and behavior since 1972. And here are some of the highlights. First of all, a large percent, 52% of Americans say that marijuana should be legal. And I think that's a libertarian position. And we certainly are friendly toward, if not comrade in arms, with the libertarian movement out there. I think that is a libertarian position. And I don't know that I disagree with that. Why is, for example, alcohol perfectly legal, marijuana not? Okay, you can disagree with me. Call me if you do. But so there's that. Okay. Portion of Americans who saying they have no religious preference has increased dramatically since 1972. At that time, 5% said they didn't identify with any particular religion. In 2014, 21% said they had no religion, a record high. Okay, we're losing our religion, which I think is a great detriment, truthfully, that people do not have this religion to follow, or, well, they do have it, they choose not to. Because I think that's what has broken down a lot of the structure of our society. Where's the play about that? Younger Americans, especially likely to fall into that group, with 30% of those younger than 35 saying they have no religion. Of course, you know what Churchill said, if you're young if you're not liberal when you're young, you have no heart, and if you are not conservative when you're older, you have no brain. Okay, so they'll come around. But here's the thing. That doesn't mean Americans are more likely to be atheists than they used to be. Just 3% who say they don't believe, 3% say they don't believe in God. Well, 5% say they're agnostic. 70% believe in life after death. Just on that issue alone, if the country, by and large, and they do by and large belong to a religion, if 21% do not, that means that 79% do. That's still large majority of people. Yeah, it's not 95-5. It's a very large majority of people. Why isn't that fervor? Why isn't that belief? Why is that not presented on stage as a good and natural and normal thing? That's what I don't understand. I've said it before. We are a center-right country. Things like this tell me that. We are a center-right country. Why isn't our point of view presented regularly in the culture that reflects that point of view? That's what I don't understand. Thing here, and this one is just all over the place. Out of 22 spending items asked about in the survey, Americans are more likely to want cuts then increase spending on only 4 of them. Welfare, interestingly enough, foreign aid, assistance to big cities, and the space program. Education raises America's highest priority for spending more money, with 70% saying the country spends too little. Foreign aid is what most Americans, 69%, would like to see cut. Well, that is not a strictly left-wing position either, right? The libertarians, remember Ron Paul, talked about why are we giving all this money and butting into the business of other countries. A point of view I am sympathetic to, not yet has fallen in line with Mr. Paul, but that is a libertarian position. Let's see where we were. Majorities of Americans want more spending on Social Security, assistance to the poor, alternative energy sources,
crime and treatment of drug addiction. But that doesn't mean they want to pay for those things. More than half of them, 57%, say their own taxes are too high. So that leads me to wonder, are we just simply a selfish society? Or do we recognize in that government is not the answer? We want to take care of these things, but not by having the government put forward higher and higher taxes on us. That's a question that, you know, the greater minds than mine will tackle. The question for me, the lesser mind, is why is none of that, almost none of it, let's say almost none of that, reflected in our theater? We read the play by C.J. Ehrlich. That one talked about the need for people to stop relying on the government handouts as a way of life. I want you also all to be aware, before I get into Mr. Kimmel's play, it's very, very short, so we have the time. What I need is I need to invest in a cough button. Our friend David Marcus, who was on this show a few weeks ago, he is an essayist and blogger, and you will see his work in the web magazine The Federalist. And his recent article is Privilege Theory Destroys the American Ideal of Equality. It is on my website. I posted it on my website, Rocky Benisher. Excuse me, not my website. I'm sorry. I don't have one yet. My Facebook site. Please friend me on Facebook. I'm happy to be your friend. We can discuss these issues that way. But on Facebook, I did share that link. And what he's talking about here, and I want to start a little bit about this, but I want to get to Mr. Kimmel's play, is a very similar thing. And he starts off by talking about, in this month's National Review, Shelby Steele offered an extremely insightful article on how liberals came to dominate American culture. You here know that article because I read much of it to you. We talked about Shelby Steele's article just a couple of weeks ago. The gist of his argument, more fully laid out in his book, White Guilt, is that post-1960s white liberals, ashamed of the nation's record on race, chose to dissociate themselves from America. He sees the rejection of America exceptionalism as an unfair clinging to past crimes in the face of the enormous good America has done for the world. He's right, but there is a glaring omission in his account of the rise of liberal cultural power. At no point does Steele mention privilege theory, the modern magic talisman that defines and explains the often absurd positions of 21st century liberals. A few more things here, and I'll promise to pick this up in weeks ahead. Privilege theory is based on a 1989 essay by Peggy McIntosh, in which she lays out the subtle ways in which white people have advantages that they often don't even realize. Robert Trzezinski has suggested privilege theory is merely an extension of Steele's theory of disassociation. This argument says that because by the 1990s, young people were so far removed from segregation and Jim Crow, privilege theory stepped in to continue their association with past guilt. This interpretation of privilege theory is off the mark. Okay? We had political correctness, right, folks? We now have privilege theory, meaning I am a white male. Okay? I have privileges I don't even know about. I just by my existence. And therefore, that makes me suspicious, and it also makes me somebody who needs to shut up. Now, I want to get to Mr. Kimmel's play, but I want to let you know that David Marcus's position here overall is that conservatives have been too slow to take on privilege theory, probably because they consider it too silly to engage, but it's dangerous. And that speaks volumes to the things I've been talking about on this show. Why are we not standing up, we conservative writers? Why are we not standing up to this nonsense? And we'll read more about from David Marcus in this article in days ahead, and we'll talk about his way of solving this. But for me, it's through the culture. He says they can be beaten, but it's through the culture is what I'm saying. We've got to make inroads in the culture, and we conservatives are too satisfied to sit back and complain, and we are too satisfied not to do anything about it because we shrug our shoulders and say, well, no one's going to produce this anyway. We've got to find ways to get ourselves produced out there. We are talented writers. We have something to say, and even if you don't like what we have to say, we need to be heard. We need a seat at the table. And we're not even allowing ourselves in the room, let alone a seat at the table. I'm passionate about this because nobody, I think, who else
has his or her finger up, particularly as it deals with theater, than David Marcus. So we'll have to look at that again. But in the time remaining, which is fleeting, let me read to you this play by our friend Hank Kimmel. Now, Hank is a conservative playwright who will be on this show next week. So please stay tuned. That's on the 29th of March. Hank Kimmel will be our guest. And Hank has written a number of plays, but this one is called Fairy Tale Ending. And it is one man, so that's going to be played by me. Rocky Benisher is Leon. Okay? So bear with me, take a listen, and hopefully next week we'll get to discuss this. We will. Hopefully you'll hear it, and then next week join us to talk to the playwright. This is Leon speaking, and he is the only character in this play. It wasn't supposed to happen that way, I know. I went over to her house just like you said, and I was prepared to do something daring and spontaneous, just like you said. And I wasn't going to be cheap about it. I cleaned out my car, just like you said. And I pulled into her driveway with no thought of turning back. And I got out of my car. And I walked toward her house, past her sienna. And then I saw it. A little sticker on her front windshield. Boycott Disney. Boycott Disney? What the hell is that about? That she's against the globalization of business, entertainment, and thought? That she's a free thinker, a girl so liberal, she despises Democrats more than she hates Republicans? She's willing to publicly repudiate the permanent icons of our culture? Unless, of course, her message was purely libertarian, and she was merely making an offhand comment about the commercialization and homogenization of American life, which didn't completely make sense to me, but was a lot less scary than what I really think. She's a crazed Christian who so vehemently opposes any public representation of pagan virtue, she's willing to diminish the value of her car to the point it's practically impossible to resell. And I don't care if you're a radical or an isolationist or an extremist. That's a poor choice. And I wonder if it's worth spending money on a girl who's so cavalier about her values, economic and otherwise. You think I backed out, don't you? You think I found a tenuous thread and weaved it into a tapestry of inaction, don't you? You think I'm so incapable of spontaneity and adventure, I'm willing to sabotage whatever opening I may have with the opposite sex just so I can avoid my range of suffering. Don't you? Not so fast, sweetheart, because I came here to ask if you wanted to go to the Fox with me on this afternoon. I have two tickets for Beauty and the Beast. And that is Fairy Tale Ending by Hank Kimmel. Thank you. Oh. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Right. Thank you. All right. The good news is, you know, we have dogs and birds and apparently 1,000 people in this audience. And right here with me. All right. So next week, we will have Mr. Kimmel, the author of this play. And I hope he will hear this reading. He was not available today, so I took advantage of his absence to read this, and then we'll discuss it next week. But I hope he will let me know where I didn't get his message across. Okay, but Hank Kimmel has got that conservative ideology at work here, and I mean that in a good way. Okay, so next week, ladies and gentlemen, Hank Kimmel, as I've been saying, we will be back with more Stage Right at 1:30 Eastern Time. I want to thank you for joining us, and I hope what I said is starting to, or what I'm saying on the show is starting to resonate. We need the conservatives to get out there and make ourselves heard. But for now, this is Rocky Benisher, and we are exiting Stage Right. Thank you.